Today we're going to hear HJR 11, and I will open a public hearing on HJR 11. Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the members of the committee. John Lim is my name, representative district from 50, Gresham area. And especially thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for having a public hearing on this HJR 11. I consider this is a very important resolution. HJR 11 is part of this education process as we encourage recovery and prevention of substance abuse. Why do we need this encouraged drug awareness? Statistics from U.S. Department of Health and Human Services show that 22.5 million Americans aged 12 and over were classified with substance abuse in 2004. 17 million under the age of 18 live in a household with a parent or adult who is a binge drinker, which is five drinks or more in one sitting. 9 million who live with a parent or adult who use illicit drug. In an October survey conducted by Oregon Partnership, they found that 34% of eighth grade girls reported drinking in the past month, and compared with 30% of eighth grade boys. According to U.S. Department of Human Services, the Department of Health and Human Services treatment help offset cost to society. Substance use disorder treatment cost $1,583 on average per person, yet has a monetary benefit to society of nearly $11,487. September in the United States last 17 years has been observed as the Alcohol Drug Awareness Month. We like to do the same thing in our state because drug and alcohol is one of the biggest problems in our state. I hope with passage of this bill we can do something about it, educating, encouraging them stay away from this drug. And then after treatment, they could be a great citizen of this state and United States.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lamb, this resolution aligns us with SAMHSA, obviously. My question would be, why for just 1 year, why did you have 2007 instead of just recognizing September as Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month, period? Why the just 1 year?
Did I say 1 year in the bill?
You said 1 year in the bill. It says recognizes September 2007 rather than just September.
Where's that section here?
Line 18.
Line 18. The slip of some recognize September as an alcohol and drug. I think you are correct. It should be every September of the year.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest, because I support this, I would suggest that we get an amendment to delete the reference to 2007 and just make September.
Mr. Chair, I 100% agree. Since the time is the essence, could we have a conceptual change since it's just one word, a strikeout?
And no, then move on. We're okay with time. We'll bring the bill back on Monday. We can carry it over if we can get the amendment in the meantime, and then we will have the work session at that time.
Thank you very
so
much.
So we will do that.
Yes, I do appreciate for pointing out. Otherwise, I overlooked it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yes. One thing that I'd just like to say, as much as I appreciate this and support this, the time is going to have to come that we're going to have to pursue a type of pilot program for a county, selecting one county in the state of Oregon to actually have a 90-day program. We can talk about, you know, the recovery month and everybody can get involved. But until we get to the heart of the matter and offer some kind of something in Oregon and that is successful, that shows how it's done. And I want to go back to the program of Stepping Stones in Klamath Falls as an example of what can be done. And I would really hope that perhaps as an outgrowth of every September that we might think in terms of getting together with a pilot program at the state level.
Okay, thank you. Before I close the public hearing, Deborah Gilmore, can you come back or did you want to testify now? Excuse me. Do you have to travel to?
I'm traveling from Portland.
Why don't you come up and testify very, very briefly, and then we'll close the public hearing, and Karen Wheeler can come back later. Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and.
Well, Chair Morset and members of the committee, my name is Deborah Gilmore, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Prevention, Education, and Recovery Association, also known as OPRA. What we are is a nonprofit association of prevention and treatment providers and professionals throughout the state of Oregon, and we contract to provide the services to approximately 80% of all of the public assistance clients that are served through the counties. Our members are basically the direct service people that are providing the treatment services and the prevention services that are helping these individuals. I applaud the efforts and echo the sentiments that were expressed by Representative Lim and also by Representative Cruz as to the need for recognition of this problem. And I would like to also thank Senator Berger for her comments, because more than just a recognition month needs to be addressed with this particular issue. And I certainly hope that you can encourage your colleagues to also take a look at Senate Bill 184 and House Bill 2535 in looking at providing some significant funding in an area where we've had devastating decreases to the point where we're not able to serve the clients that actually do need the help. So thank you very much. We're very much in support of the bill and would like to work with you on whatever needs to happen to move some things forward that would actually provide some money to provide the services, not just recognition.
Now, I'm not going to let you get away without exploring that situation, because you're talking about a alcohol recovery fee, which means that we recover some of the money that is spent on alcohol and use that money to help solve problems that come about through addiction and so on and so forth, and that will end up being a great cost to the state in the long run. So that's what we're talking about, right?
Mr. Chair, absolutely, that's what we're talking about. The recovery fee that you're referring to has languished in a frozen state since I graduated from high school. That's how long ago it was, and I'm having a major birthday coming up, so it's been a long, long time.
30 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much, Deborah. I appreciate that, and we will close the public hearing on HJR 11, and we'll bring it back next Monday when we have the amendment, and we'll finish our discussion. Thank you. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2993. Representative Hanna, would you come up, please?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, colleagues. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. For the record, my name is Bruce Hanna. I represent House District 7, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. For some time, I have been concerned about issues related to how we provide in-home care services. Some of you know that back home, I'm a past chairman of the local hospital. I'm also the immediate past chairman of the local community cancer center. And I have seen the effects of how we deal with folks in their homes. While serving on the 2005 Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health and Human Services, we also heard several issues concerning in-home care services. To that end, I've introduced House Bill 2993, which is a very simple bill. The bill requires that older disabled citizens be provided the information to make an informed choice regarding the delivery of their in-home care services. It requires providing information about both their responsibility as employers, should they choose to hire services directly, or alternatively, about the responsibilities of an in-home care provider agency should they choose that option. Currently, Oregon's law requires the state to assure that seniors and disabled citizens retain, and I quote, the right of free choice in planning and managing their lives. Expanding those provisions to include the information needed to make decisions on these important services will help carry out the spirit of our laws, encouraging self-determination even in when we are dependent on others for care. There are others here that will address more of the practical details of what providing informed choice will mean to both seniors and disabled and the related providers. Probably the most important part is to empower those in need of these services through accurate information so they can retain their dignity and independence that we all want and deserve. I'm quite happy to be here, and I look forward to this bill moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? There is an amendment to have disabled citizens.
It just makes it appropriate language. Right. So,
okay. Right. Questions? Seeing no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Representative. Kathleen Cosgrove and Jeanette Burkett. Burkett. I think we're late now.
This won't take long.
Yeah.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Cosgrove. I'm here today representing Addis Home Health Care. And I would like to encourage your support for House Bill 2993. Really what this bill does, as Representative Hannah testified, is to put into statute what is existing state policy regarding giving seniors and disabled persons an informed choice about the selection of their home health care provider. The bill is a very simple bill. And it really reinforces the concept that people who under Medicaid and Oregon Project independent programs and who want help remaining independent retain their right to choose the services, how those services are delivered. Seniors and disabled persons who are eligible for home health care services need to be given the information so they can make an informed choice between hiring an individual or family member and hiring someone from a home health care agency to provide those services. And there's clearly advantages and disadvantages to both of those options, and what this bill will do will make sure that seniors and disabled persons are given full information in order to make an informed choice. The bill has no known opposition and passed the House with a vote of 59-0 and is supported by many of the colleagues in our room, including the Oregon Home Health Care Association and AARP, and it looks like you're going to be hearing from some of those people today. So if I may answer any questions, I'm happy to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. I'm Jeanette Burkett. I'm an administrator within the Seniors and People with Disabilities Division of Department of Human Services. And I'm here to testify regarding House Bill 2993 and to express essentially the division's support for the concept of informed choice. It's a tenet that goes deep into the history of our division, and it is a practice that we have followed since the inception of our service delivery system, essentially. And federal law requires that any eligible client for Medicaid long-term care services in Oregon be given an option of informed choice regarding either the ability to reside in a nursing home or to receive services in community-based care settings, which are many options of residential care and in addition to in-home service program. And as part of that informed choice process, when the client chooses to be served in their own homes, our case managers are trained as part of that process to apprise them of the local services available, because they do vary from county to county around the state. So it is our practice. And in fact, we have recently developed and transmitted a policy transmittal that reiterated this expectation to our case managers. And because we do feel it is important, and there's been some confusion, I think, because of the differences from county to county. So we very much support the concept, and it, in fact, is our current practice in the division.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Senator.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Are you saying that the bill is unnecessary?
No, Senator. Chair Morissette, and Senator Berger. I'm not saying it's unnecessary. I guess I'm saying we support the concept and we follow the practice, and we don't know that it's necessary to put it into statute, but we certainly don't object.
Yes.
It's Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, if I may address that question. Part of what prompted this was some background information that might be helpful is that upon our urging, Representative Hanna requested a study done by DHS of how this selection was going. And what we discovered was that about 4% of the persons were selecting or being directed towards home health care agencies in our state versus other states where there's a dual system, about 40% of the persons select home health care agencies. And we suspect there was probably some long-standing misinformation about the costs and some other confusion related to why this was happening, and that's what prompted us to pursue having this in statute.
I don't have a problem with that. There are times when administrative rule or practices follow a certain course, but not always, or, you know, you want certainty, you want sideboards, you want some, you know, definitions and so on, and so I don't see a problem with reinforcing what may be happening most of the time with some language that would improve the service. So
thank you
very much. Mm-hmm. We'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2993.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2993.
Senator Cruz moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2993. Any concerns, comments? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2993 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 993 as amended. 2993 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Burge?
Aye.
Senator Mons Anderson? Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 2993 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Cruz will carry the bill.
Okay,
thank you very much. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2633. Representative Hunt, would you please come forward? And do you want to talk about the bill? I haven't given you an opportunity to do that yet, have I?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We've been kind of in a rush.
House Bill 26.
But now we can relax because Dave is here. He doesn't need to go anywhere, so we'll just take our time. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2633A specifies types of schools and programs to which the Department of Human Services may refer a person for vocational training. It provides definitions for vocational training and vocational rehabilitation training.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. This bill does not have quite the support of the previous bill you heard. This only passed the House 57-0. And so
Send it back then. My God, you got to be better than that, Dave.
Might have just had a couple people off the floor for a smoke break. I don't know, that might have been it.
Okay.
The core issue in this bill is trying to ensure that state dollars, in this case voc rehab dollars, are actually being spent to serve students who are actually at legitimate schools. Today, there are not restrictions on where those voc rehab dollars can go for training. And so this bill, if you look at Section 2, tries to narrow the scope of that to make sure it's going to, frankly, legitimate schools. And you can see the list that's there, schools that are accredited by the U.S. Department of Education, schools that confer degrees, degree-granting institutions, community colleges, institutions of higher ed, Oregon Health Sciences University, career schools that are licensed, or apprenticeship programs. Now, you will also notice under Section 2, Sub 2 there, that it specifically has an exclusion that this does not apply to vocational rehab training, which is then defined at the very end of the bill on page 2, line 33 and 34 and 35, where it talks about vocational rehab training being very basic skills training. We're not talking about if somebody needs to learn how to dial a telephone or how to catch the bus. That's not the kind of focus we're talking about. We're talking about where it's vocational rehab dollars that are specifically supposed to be for occupational and skill training, trying to make sure those are going for occupational skill training. That is, even if it's not at a degree-granting school, that it be one that is at least licensed by the state. Today, there are not those restrictions in place, and frankly, there have been abuses in other states. There may well have been abuses in Oregon as well. Fortunately, we haven't run into front page news about it yet. That has happened in other states, and so this is really trying to get ahead of ourselves and make sure that that taxpayer dollars are spent wisely and fairly, and only at fully licensed and regulated schools.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, Representative Hunt, are the what am I getting at here? Are the union apprenticeship programs supportive of this? I know they're listed. Are they all accredited?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, that actually, they haven't, frankly, testified in support or in opposition to this bill. The primary focus of the bill, even though you do see A through G there, the primary focus of the bill has been on the career schools. I think in other states, that's been where the experience has been, where you have these career schools that are private, for-profit, non-degree granting career schools that are not licensed by the state. And you've got vocational dollars going to those. I don't think there's been a problem one way or the other with apprenticeship issues. And so I think by just making sure that they're registered apprenticeship programs, I haven't heard any concern at all about that aspect of the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Chad. I just want to make sure, I mean, those are very valuable programs, and I would just want to make sure that we're not making a disconnect there inadvertently. So.
Yeah, and again, Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I'm not aware of apprenticeship programs that are unregistered today that are getting any vocational training dollars, whereas there are unlicensed career schools that are getting vocational dollars.
Right, Mr. Chair, I know, just to follow up, I know there have been discussions over the past a couple sessions about who should have jurisdiction over those apprenticeship programs. You're well aware of that. And,
sure.
Okay.
Well, they've had two opportunities to testify, and they haven't shown up at either time. So, other questions? Oh, Senator Bridger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hunt, one of the things that concerns me and has concerned me ever since I've come to this building is the number of bills that we have that take lots of time and cost lots of money to process. We get about 4,000 and end up seeing two and have spent a lot of money. So I always like to ask a few questions as to why the bill came,
sure,
to be sure that it was not just something frivolous. But you say that actually, to your knowledge, we've not had occurrences of some of this training being put into unaccredited schools.
Actually, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, we definitely have vocational dollars that today are going in unlicensed schools,
okay,
unlicensed career schools. We have not had the kind of front page scandalous news that has been true in other states yet.
Okay.
Although, frankly, there is another bill that is probably heading toward the Education Committee. They started off in the same committee in the House, but this, because this is DHS dollars, this came to you all, that gets at beginning to more effectively regulate career schools and make sure that these for-profit, non-degree-granting private career schools are actually up to snuff, and that the accreditation and regulation we do is actually adequate. This is just trying to deal with another aspect and saying, of the vocational training dollars that we are sending out, some of them definitely are going today to unlicensed career schools. Mm-hmm. We haven't had the huge scandals that other states have had yet.
All right. Thank you very much for that answer.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else testifying? Seeing no one else testifying, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2633A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2633A engrossed to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2633A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing no discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Ron Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison?
Aye. Senate Bill 2633A will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Anybody want to carry that bill? Volunteers, I will carry the bill. Okay. Next,
you were to get it from the U.S.
The next bill. Where are we? We're at the bottom of the list already. Gee whiz.
I know, somewhat so exciting.
Okay, we will open the public hearing on House Bill 2867, and we have one more legislator here. We've had four legislators for four bills. Representative Kotek, did you want to testify on this bill?
I'm having to wait until you hear the substance of the bill. I have an add-on.
Okay.
That could be trouble.
She's here with the amendment. Okay, could you describe the bill so we can separate the substance from the add-on?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2867 modifies the current definition of dental hygiene to include the diagnosis and treatment planning for dental services and the application of dental sealants and fluoride, reduces educational requirements of supervised dental hygienists obtaining permits as limited access permit dental hygienists, specifies where dental hygienists can practice, and directs the Board of Dentistry to adopt rules specifying other locations where dental hygienists may work and the degree of supervision required by a dentist, declares emergency effective on passage. And the dash A3 amendments.
Do we have this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. You were hiding it.
The dash A3 amendments come from another House bill, which they allow counselors and assistants who have received proper training to apply fluoride varnish to the teeth of children enrolled in or receiving dental services from the WIC program, the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten program, or a federal Head Start program.
Okay. Kathleen, would you come up, please? Patrick?
Chair, we've dealt with this issue before.
We
expanded their scope two sessions ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Right.
One session ago? Okay.
Kathleen, would you...
And Mr. Chair, even though we did that, my hygiene is still just causing me a great deal of pain. I just don't understand that.
Chair Morrison, members of the committee, I'm still Kathleen Cosgrove, but now I'm representing the Oregon Dental Hygienists at the moment to talk to you about 2867A, which passed the floor of the House with a 55-0 vote. So this has been a bill that has been negotiated and worked out with the Oregon Dental Association, the Oregon Dental Hygiene Association, the Oregon Rural Health Association supports it, and Willamette Dental Group does. And we're very happy to come to you today to talk about this bill. And I will speak to the 2867A and then... but also wanted to let you know that the amendments that you will be hearing later, we are in support of those as well. So,
Oral health is frequently left out of the health care discussion, yet it is a critical factor in creating healthy kids and healthy adults in Oregon. What this bill does is allow dental hygienists or gets dental hygienists and limited access permit dental hygienists out into the field to provide preventive oral health services to underserved populations. The hygienists are serving people who can't make it into the dentist's office, such as kids in school-based programs, the elderly, and the disabled in nursing homes and in rural communities where dentists may not be available. With this bill, the dental hygienist and the LIP dental hygienist will assess the need for service, apply sealants, prescribe and apply fluoride, and refer to a dentist when treatment is needed. There is a second component to this bill which has to do with reducing the clinical hour requirement that is in statute currently from 5,000 hours down to 2,500 hours for the limited access permit license before a dental hygienist can apply for the LIP license. And just sort of by way of background, to apply for an LIP license, the dental hygienist has to have completed their dental hygiene education, be licensed as a dental hygienist, have completed advanced training of 40 additional hours in education, and then have what would, if accepted or if passed, would be the 2,500 hours of clinical practice before they can apply to receive their LIP license. So what this bill is doing is getting more LIPs out into the field sooner and more dental hygienists out into the field to do preventive oral health care. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Bratz, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. I'll be very brief. We are in support of 2867A. We were happy to work with the parties involved in crafting the 2867A as you see it. So.
Yes. Question.
Yes, I want to go back to the supervised clinical practice, the amount of supervised clinical practice from 5,000 hours. To 2,500. At what point in this process does that take place? They have the education. They've done the hours. When does that requirement drop?
For a dental hygienist to apply for limited access permit, they have to have completed all of their dental hygiene education, the regular standing education, and they have to take 40 hours. Of additional experience, and then they have to prove that over the course of a five-year period of time, they have had 25 hours of clinical experience. 2,500. One of the reasons why we have asked for this is what we were discovering in rural communities, this was proving to be a barrier for dental hygienists to apply for their limited access permit, because many dental hygienists work part-time. Many of the dentists that they work for also work part-time, and so it was hard for them to get the 5,000 hours within a five-year period of time. So this removes that barrier.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So I'm doing my math here. 2,500 hours divided by 40 hours a week would come out to 62 plus. Weeks. So that's still a significant amount of supervised clinical practice.
Yes, it is. And that's in addition to the clinical supervised practice they already have in dental hygiene school. So, but this was the subject for negotiation between the Dental Association and the Board of Dentistry, and this was a negotiated compromise figure that we have all agreed to this time.
I still follow. I still feel it's excess. But I know, dealing with the Dental Association, that this is probably the best compromise we could get. But we truly, truly need to have more people trained to apply the fluoride to our children. And I'm excited to see the amendment coming along too. But maybe we can chip that down even further.
Thank you, Senator Monas Anderson.
Mr. Chair, may I ask Senator Monas Anderson what she's, is she objecting to the $2,500?
I think it's too much.
Would you like to respond to that?
Again, it was a compromise between the various groups, and actually most dental hygienists don't work 40 hours a week. They work less than 40 hours a week.
Right.
Yeah. So you don't think we ought to send this bill back and work? No.
That's what I see. Do we want another amendment to take that 25 down to 1,000 hours?
No, we're okay. We're okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Kathleen Bradley, would you, Catherine Bradley, would you come up, please? And Margie Hoffman. Catherine, good to see you again.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Catherine Bradley. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health. Forgot for a moment. And I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 2867A. I'm not speaking specifically to the amendment, although we would probably be in support of that. I just need to finish being able to read that. The reason we're in support of this particular bill is that it really has an impact on our dental sealant program. And the materials that we're passing out to you are twofold. One is a copy of the testimony, and one is a little two-pager on dental sealants. So it provides a little bit of background and understanding about dental sealants if that's something you're not as familiar with. Currently in our oral health program, we've done a lot of work with communities here in Oregon to create school-based centers for dental sealants, and it does really rely on being able to have accessible dental providers. It's been extremely challenging in our rural and frontier areas to find dentists who can do that. So the ability to be able to actually work with limited access permit dental hygienists greatly expands our ability to be able to do that. School-based dental sealant programs are recognized best practices nationally along with community water fluoridation. And actually, between community water fluoridation and the dental sealant programs, those are considered to be the two most effective community-based public health preventive strategies. I'm available to answer any questions you might have. I think you've got a fair amount of information on this already.
Okay. Questions? Thank you.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I represent the Oregon Dental Association and don't need to take very much of your time at all, but just wanted to say that we support 2867A. Hope you will do the same, and we've really enjoyed working with the stakeholders and during this process to come together with a bill that will provide dental care to our most vulnerable population. So, thanks.
Thank you, Margie.
That was good testimony.
Good testimony. Questions?
The gold star.
Are the two of you familiar with Dashery?
Briefly.
I think, and Representative Kotek, I think, is going to speak to the Dash 3s. Yeah. But we're also, just want to say for the record, we're in support of the Dash 3s as well.
Thank you. Representative Kotek, would you come up there? Now we're into the supplement. Dealt with the substance.
There you go. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. Nice to see you again. So thank you for your indulgence. Let me tell you the story of the A3 amendments. We had a House Bill, 3017, which passed out of my subcommittee on health policy. And due to just an administrative oversight, we did not move it to the full committee in time to get it heard last Monday. And that's what you have before you today. The sections in the A3, you have some existing language that shows you where it fits in the dental hygienist statutes, but what's in bold is what was passed with flying colors out of the subcommittee, and I had every belief that we'd pass out of the full and onto the floor with no problem. We have... There's an advocate for dental care named Dr. April Love, and one of the things that she works on is working to train individuals in the community to do fluoride varnish application. If I may, I'll just pass this around. Fluoride varnish is a topical application that really takes no level of skill to do. And I want to point that out, even though we just got finished talking about dental sealants. And by the way, I'm very excited about the LAP expansion. I think that's really needed. applying fluoride varnish does not take a dental hygienist or anything like that. So just want to make clear that if it's in here in this statute, it's not really about dental hygienists per se. But what we want to do is to allow a limited amount of, be careful when you take that off because it gets sticky. So you put this on your teeth and school nurses can apply. I'm just letting, I did that too. And you
is it right up here? This is
I think so, yeah, because okay. Apparently it comes off. So someone else on our committee, the whole thing came off and they got stuck. So so apparently the
it's super glue.
The fluoride varnish is very sticky. And so a school nurse or any other, you know, a teaching assistant can be given a very little limited amount of training to say to apply this. You can do it as often as 3 or 4 times a year. It helps apply a level of fluoride that most of which will come off, but it adds enough extra protection onto the teeth. It's a very popular method of prevention in Europe. And what Dr. Love wanted to do was provide some permissive language in statute that said, if we train some folks, WIC counselors, school counselors, to do this, that it's okay. And we really meant to have this bill go forward. It just didn't happen. So we found this vehicle to put it in, and I promise to champion this in concurrence if I have to explain it back on the House floor, and I'm happy to answer any questions. So that's what we got.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. You have a question?
Yep. Thanks. Now, this fluoride is food grade fluoride, right?
Chair Morissette and Senator George, I don't know the answer to that question, okay. But. Apparently, when someone asked Dr. Love or one of the folks, you know, the worry about ingesting too much fluoride had come up, and the way she described it is, it's at such a low grade, and you put it on quickly, most of it comes off, you know, the minute, you know, someone takes a drink or something, child will wipe it off or whatever, and it's at such a low dosage that there's no concern about it being ingested, so... I don't know if that helps. I'm not an expert, but that was my recollection.
Yeah. It says it's 5% sodium fluoride varnish, 5%, so who knows what the 95% other stuff is.
Gunky right. Stuff.
Glue.
And Chair Morissette and Senator Monis Anderson, and what she had said was you can apply it several times during the year, so if it was super-duper toxic, I don't think they'd be applying it that way, and they wouldn't do it that many times during the year.
Now, permissive language to allow dentists to do this, or this is an individual thing. You can go out and explain that.
Oh, thank you, Chair Morissette. For example, so if Dr. Love, who's a community activist, wanted to go and talk with, say, some teachers in a Head Start situation, give them, you know, a quick tutorial on fluoride varnish, that they would be allowed to go ahead and apply that based on, you know, approval from the parent or the child. This is a very... one could argue you don't even need this, but she felt that it's good to at least let people know that this is out there and that with a little bit of training, non-dental professionals can start applying this. And we didn't want to say you have to do it because that could have created an undue burden on some programs, but we wanted to have some language that said, this is an okay thing to do. If you get some training, you should go ahead and do it.
This is available where?
Chair Moore said it would depend on, and I go back to Dr. Love as someone who's out there promoting this particular type of thing. It would be up to the Head Start or the WIC agency.
Now, wait a minute. Where would they purchase it?
Is it an on-the-shelf product
it's an
or
on-the-shelf,
over-the-counter product? Kath.
Oh, yeah. Please. You're pushing my level of understanding here. So,
for the record, my name is Catherine Bradley from the Office of Family Health with Oral Health Programs. So currently right now we have fluoride varnish that is provided by public health nurses when they do home visits. We've got a set of protocols for training that we thought would be applicable across many different settings. What it does require is that the setting purchases it. So, for example, a local public health department now may purchase fluoride varnish in those little application, and then they're the public health nurses have it with them. I believe it's about $250 to purchase. So the decision then would be for the school or for the WIC clinic or the public health clinics to make the determination that's something they wanted to invest in. And the mechanisms for doing the training are fairly straightforward, and we've already got protocols that are established.
So
for
this
that.
Is not off the shelf in your local 7-Eleven?
Chair Moore said no, it's not.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I know that it's limited to counselors and health assistants. In WIC, I'm not sure if they're health assistants, but I know they're nutritionists. But I'm trying to think if there are other people that we might be trained that are in a setting in the schools or in the WIC clinics. And I just can't remember. I think this will cover probably the majority of them, but the only thing I could think of was the nutritionists in the WIC clinics that were ones who could also maybe apply them.
Chair Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, I think the intent would be that probably just in terms of we would be less likely to train nutritionists and more likely to train the counselors just because of the utilization of professional time and how it would be utilized within a WIC setting. I don't think it's meant to be exclusive. I think it's intended to be more inclusive. There might be some other language that would on to try and identify that, because I think that's the intent.
Okay, and then follow up.
Yeah.
Is there a definition for health assistant? Because I would hate to have us exclude certain people as a health assistant. I mean, if you're assisting in health, it should cover quite a few people, unless there's a significant or a definite definition in statute.
Oh, Chair Morissette and Senator.
There's no definition in the.
Well,
past
this is there. Permissive,
but we're trying to define who.
Well, I know, but let me rephrase that. Aside from being permissive, is there enough flexibility within the statute to allow other providers to get the training from someone, if not you, or someone else? I mean. Is that that's?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're not excluding someone that we're not thinking of right now, and I just don't know enough about the settings where these would happen.
Chair Morissette, Senator Morris-Anderson, I think the intent was that we did want to be sure that it occurred within some sort of an organized context, that it followed protocols that were designed by the state.
Okay.
But I don't think it was meant to be anymore.
Okay.
And we'll find out.
Yeah, now that means then that you could design protocols for a group that wanted to come along and do it. You may not be proactively out seeking groups to do it, but if a group wanted to come to you, mm-hmm. that's a possibility. Senator George.
Yeah, when it says who have been trained in the application, is there some formal description of what being trained is?
Chair Morissette and Senator George, the intent was that we would use the same protocols we already have established at the state that we've handed to the public health departments
okay.
for use by their public health nurses. It's akin to swabbing a tooth, so we feel that it doesn't really require a professional to do the training of the lay public. It really could be following a standardized outline.
Mr. Chairman, if I don't want to get into a debate and put in non-food grade fluoride in the waters of the state of Oregon, but is there any evidence that this is substantially more effective than a toothpaste with fluoride in it?
Chair Morissette, Senator George, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll be glad to investigate that and have that back to the committee.
Okay.
Chair Morissette and Senator George, I think they're just different. From my understanding is, you know, fluoride or fluoridated toothpaste you're doing hopefully daily or twice a day, and I think it's just different. This is kind of akin to when you go to the dentist and they make you, you know, swish with the fluoride, and it's that kind of one-time treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're different, although fluoride is the active ingredient. I'm not sure if that helps or not, but
okay. I'd heard that it was more effective.
Yeah, well, so if you're only supposed to do it three times a year as mm-hmm. opposed to twice a day, I mean, that would mean it's a different process or a different. And with the stickiness of it, I think, I would see it as being different. Senator Verger, were you?
Yes.
Well, I was just going to comment, Mr. Chairman, that if, in fact, it came out of here black, that could be really cool thing for kids to have on their teeth.
Okay. Could you do that?
Well, Chair Moore said they actually encouraged all of us on my committee to go home and do it, and she suggested at night, because as adults, we might not enjoy the stickiness, but you could apply it at night and then fall asleep. I actually have not tried mine yet, as you can tell. I still have my swab, so.
Senator Verger.
I'm assuming something, and when I assume things, sometimes I get in trouble. So I'm going to just clarify. There obviously have been negotiations and compromises in this bill and people that have worked hard to come together with it. I'm assuming that they're very happy to have you included in the amendment that also extends another service. Am I right?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, that is correct. Everyone who worked on the original bill is fine. They're happy. They're very accommodating. And thank you for asking.
Okay. Well, I'll hold my script in front of me. How is the author of the bill on this? Senator Greenlee supports the bill, your amendment, right? It's his bill.
Actually, Chair Morissette, it's the original bill. On this bill, he is fine. You mean adding the amendment in to this bill? Yes. He is aware of it, is my understanding.
Okay. Was he the sponsor of the bill?
He's the sponsor of 2867. The original bill that we're trying to insert was actually myself and Representative Crummell, and we're all in the loop, so we knew that it had gone astray, but Representative Greenlee was on this bill that we're putting the amendment into.
Okay.
And he's
so,
good with
so
it.
Thank you for the clarification.
I think, Ms. Chair, that's only fair, since that he's the chair of the committee that dropped the ball on the bill that got lost, so...
Chair Morissette, Senator Cruz, and all due respect, is probably my fault, but we'll pass it.
But I can catch, okay. So that's okay.
Other questions?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2867, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2867.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2867.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2867. A3 amendments to House Bill 2867. Discussion? Seeing no discussion. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2867 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2867 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you call the discussion? Okay, call the roll, please.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Montanay?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator
Morissette? Aye. House Bill 2867, as amended, passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And who wants to carry the bill? Anybody?
Okay.
Oh, good. Senator Virgil will carry the bill.
All right.
Good. So with that, we will close the public work session and adjourn. Mm-hmm.